I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and about what's next. It's a show that wants to ask questions, peel back the layers of our average everyday experience, and go beyond scratching the surface. We interview amazing people with incredible ideas and stories who have done wild, weird, and wonderful things. Remember that imagination shared creates collaboration, and collaboration creates community, and community inspires social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face.
So my next interview is with a documentary filmmaker who's here in Toronto at Hot Docs for the North American premiere of her new film, Lila at the Bridge. Elizabeth Marzai is here today to talk to me about a deeply emotional and moving piece. This is a film about how complicated life really can be, and about certainly how complicated life can be for somebody who takes on the role of a caregiver. Afghanistan is 90% of the world's opium is produced in Afghanistan, and 12% of the country are users, are in many, many cases addicts. We talk about stereotypes in this film. We talk about what it means to be brave and persistent and tough. And this woman, Lila, that Elizabeth, the filmmakers follow, is a remarkable woman. She's strong. She's everything that you would expect in somebody who's going to take on a system, who's going to take on gender disparity, who's going to take on something that Elizabeth refers to as systemic misogyny within the country, within the culture. And we see that in a variety of ways coming out. She's not a religious person, but she is driven by those underlying and fundamental, I guess you could say, foundational truths of what it means to care for others, which to me is a thread that runs through all religions, it seems to me. Mother Teresa is somebody that she takes some inspiration from. We talk about the corruption in the country, and we talk about how challenging it all really is. You're going to want to watch this film. You're going to want to listen in on the conversation. It's coming right up in just a few seconds. Elizabeth Marzai talking about her new film. Don't forget davidpecklive.com for more information about my writing and my speaking. And also face2facelive.ca for more interviews with filmmakers and writers and speakers and philosophers and comedians. And coming right up. And if you want to get behind the work that I'm doing, you can do that through patreon.com. And coming right up right now, Elizabeth Marzai talking about her new film, Lila at the Bridge. Well, welcome to Face to Face. We're joined by a very special guest here with us today on this beautiful sunny morning here in Toronto. We are joined by Elizabeth Marzai to talk about her new film, Lila at the Bridge. Another Hot Docs presentation and another whole week coming up for I would imagine, for you, Elizabeth. So first out of the gate, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, David. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and congratulations on the film.
Thank you. It's really exciting to have our North American premiere at Hot Dog.
Yeah, and what can you say about, so the people that you've shared it with so far, has there been any kind of thread for you already? I mean, I'm sure it's maybe it's a small group. I don't know. Maybe you've screened it with particular audiences along the way. But is there anything that's sort of thematically bubbling to the surface from some of the immediate reactions?
Well, it's just been really moving to see people, you know, respond so much to the film. People were crying in the audience. And wow. I think the most moving thing of all for me was when we brought Layla up on the stage herself and she got this standing ovation. And it was just incredible because Layla was crying and people in the audience were crying. And it was like, I was not to cry. So.
And did she have her her AK-47 with her, or did she leave that at home?
Thank God she left that at home.
She left that at home. So I think that's really, really kind of an interesting, kind of a joke in one way, and the way you sort of presented it in such a serious moment and a, quite a tragic moment is quite comedic in its own way, but it really speaks to her character. Can you talk a little bit about this woman and what this film is about and why people need to see it?
Well, Layla is a really extraordinary woman. So, you know, I had met her back when I was living in Afghanistan, and I just thought, like, this is such an incredible story that I want to follow. So we became quite close, and I just started filming with her. And, you know, as I began filming her over the course of those months that turned into years, I realized that she's really a complex woman as well. There's so much more to her than meets the eye. And so here she is. She's known as the mother of the addict, but yet she's also really searching for her own family because, right. you know, her children are separated from her. So it's as much as it is about her being a mother to the addict, it's also about her trying to really desperately find her own place and her own family. And so I just think that, you know, she's brave and she's persistent and she's really tough and she's funny, and I think that she defies a lot of stereotypes that we in the West may have about a woman from Afghanistan or even a woman from a predominantly Muslim nation. And yet she's doing this job that it's hard to do, you know, working with people that have heroin, it's hard to do anywhere in the world. And of course, especially Afghanistan has its own special set of challenges.
Sure.
So I think that she'll really inspire a lot of people.
There's so many things we need to talk about. And again, what a brilliant film. And I so love the way, again, like any great doc, it just raises so many issues, so many questions. Doesn't necessarily provide us with a whole lot of answers, but I think that's just, you know, to do that in 90 minutes or 100 minutes is a kind of a massive oversimplification and maybe not the job of a documentarian. But I love the places that I think we need to go as a result of seeing a film like this.
Mm-hmm.
It just opens up so many doors, it seems to me. 90%. Before I get into that stat, I want to talk more about, you know, women's empowerment and gender disparity and so on, because that comes up in the film. And yet there's a few scenes that you leave in where you think, if this is how women are behaving in the global South, we don't need to really worry about women. You know, I mean, she's just so strong. And that one scene where I don't know what happens, but it's traffic. And I've traveled quite a bit through Southeast Asia. I understand traffic where she tells the guy that, I don't know, some crack. I wrote it down somewhere, something about you should go. Get your mama a license. It was just it was hysterical, but the strength of character and her sense of self, you know, to be able to speak back like that in a culture like that is remarkable.
It is. It's absolutely remarkable. And that was the thing that I was always kind of trying to get to the bottom of, like, where does that come from?
Right.
I was like, is your mom like that? Like, where did you get that from? And the only kind of real answer that she would give is just that because of what she's been through in her life, she was just able to turn that around into something else and kind of take control of her own destiny. But I think it's deeper than that.
You know, you have a scene near the end of the film where she's meeting with, I guess, one of the ministers of the, I think it's the Narcotics Commission in that area, and the whole meeting kind of goes sideways, and she responds, and that's being really kind, but she responds by saying something about the love of a mother.
Mm-hmm.
And do you wonder, Elizabeth, if that maybe is some of the catalyst for her? Obviously it's never one thing, right? It's we're all pretty complex people for the most part, it seems to me. But because I couldn't help but wonder myself, where does that come from? Where does that desire to reach out and to help others and to love people who are on the surface seemingly so unlovable?
Yeah, well, with Layla, I mean, in terms of the catalyst, a lot of it became from her brother, who was himself an addict for 25 years, and witnessing that. But I think also, you know, she does talk a lot about being a mother, and I think that is what really differentiates her approach from a lot of other rehabilitation centers, and there aren't that many, but you know, the ones that are, it's just that she does take this motherly role, and that she is there for them once they're released as well, and once they do get clean, it's like she's there kind of playing this maternal role for them and trying to kind of shepherd them out into the world. And I think that is really what is distinctive about her approach.
So let's set up a bit of context here. I think most of our listeners will know what's been going on to some degree in Afghanistan for quite a few years now. But today, as a result of many different things, I think somebody in the film says 1,000 different issues, but you know, 90% of the world's opium, 12% of its countries are users. Can you give us a little more historical kind of context for why that is and why we're here?
Oh gosh, well that's a very complicated question. I'm not going to pretend to know all of the factors, but you know, I can tell you that, you know, the opium production has just skyrocketed since the United States came to Afghanistan. So although Afghanistan produced opium before during the Taliban, it's technically banned during the Taliban, but I think there was still production. But, you know, once in 2001 and until today, it's just been rising steadily, you know, and this is also in spite of or despite like $8.7 billion or so dollars the United States invested into counter narcotics. So obviously something is not working, and I'm not sure exactly how to answer that question in a short period of time because it really warrants a huge discussion.
It's kind of a PhD thesis in a sense.
It really is. Yeah.
Well, I mean, let's go right down from bottom up. A bag of heroin costs $2.
Yes.
So, and I think the point is that it's more expensive to buy food. It's more expensive to buy meat.
Yes. It is more expensive to buy food. You can eat a meal for more money. It costs more to eat a meal than it does to buy heroin.
And so is this, you know, Layla talks about the society at one point being sordid, and I think her line was, the society is sordid and damned. Mm-hmm. Very negative, very cynical kind of approach about what's happening mm-hmm. around her. And yet I don't know of anyone really who in a sense has rolled up their sleeves more. To get their hands dirty and to really make a difference. You say there's not a lot going on in the country. Are there others doing similar things?
There are other rehabilitation centers. The government has a number of them. They don't use a Narcotics Anonymous approach that like Layla does. And some of the other centers also use morphine as a method of treatment, like to kind of help people wean people off heroin. Right. And according to what, you know, Gulistan and I had heard over the course of these over three years of filming is that, you know, the people that were treated with morphine really didn't like that method of treatment because then they got addicted to morphine.
Right.
And then once they're so quote unquote clean, then they're back out on the streets of Kabul with no work, with no opportunities, and now addicted to something else. So I think that there was just people really preferred her approach and just, you know, quitting cold turkey. And then also there's that follow up and trying to find employment for them so that they don't go back.
Well, and there's a sense of community too, hopefully to it, or at least that's the theory behind it, isn't it?
Yes. So, because addiction affects everyone. You know, Afghanistan's got many tribes, many languages, and no one is a stranger to it.
So when she's sitting down with that government minister who basically says your ways don't work, you're the one who needs to be fixed, and you know, the meeting that I was referring to earlier, is there a sense in which you know, she of course says, okay, I'm going to come back and I'm going to show you that what we're doing is working, and I'm going to prove to you. I don't know what that means exactly. PowerPoint, essays, documents, statistics, et cetera.
Mm-hmm,
I know that's how it would happen here, right? You would have to go to a government agency. You'd have to write a proposal. You'd have to have KPIs and a log frame. And here's how many, you know, I get the sense that Layla doesn't have that kind of time, nor does she have those kind of resources. I mean, she's in the middle of it. I mean, you open the film up. You open the film up with her. She's in the middle of it, under the bridge.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. She's living this. And that minister that told her that, I mean, that's really, I just feel like systemic misogyny right there. Because, you know, in the scene, he's actually talking to her, but not looking at her and directing it to someone else.
Elizabeth,
her colleague.
It took me a second to realize what was going on. Like, right. I was, I just went, whoa, did he just say what I think he said?
Yeah, it was pretty unbelievable, like, sitting there and witnessing that. And, you know, Layla says, like, I'm going to prove this to you. And, you know, she just takes it, she recognizes his misogyny for what it is. And she sees that, you know, he's not out there living with the people. He's not doing that kind of work himself. And she won't give up.
Do you think any of this comes from, you know, she talks a little bit about, I think, her anger and how her heart is broken. You know, mm-hmm. she was, I mean, I can't believe the issues that you raised in this film, by the way, but the whole idea of child marriage and, mm-hmm. you know, having her 12 years old when she was married to a 29-year-old, I think she said mm-hmm. left him after about 10 years.
Yeah, about 10 years.
Her children don't speak to her. There's got to be a sense of righteous, I would think, righteous anger there. Or maybe it truly mm-hmm. is this empathy for others is what I was just astounded by. And mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. and I think of people who work in prisons, you know, mm-hmm. same kind of thing, really, isn't it? You know, people who work in first aid on the front lines of a battle.
Right.
I mean, talk about rolling up your sleeves. So, yeah, this empathy for addicts and for others is just it's beautiful. And it's
yeah,
the kind of
it
thing.
Really is.
How do we, and I'm sure you've wondered about this, but how do we grow that? how do you nurture that approach?
I think that, you know, anyone who's been through something traumatic, like Layla has, and I think a lot of us in other ways have been through trauma of our own, and
sure.
that it really helps us to relate to the underdog, you know? I mean,
right.
Layla's working with people who have been forgotten, who have been cast off. I mean, I can't even count how many times I was present when someone said something to her, like, why should we donate to your treatment of addicts? Like, they should just die. Like, it's better for them to just die of AIDS or whatever other tuberculosis
sure,
or whatever else,
yeah.
an overdose. And Layla's like, no, you know, they're human beings. They deserve a chance. And I don't know if that comes from her just, you know, having been treated that way before in the past as well. Like, I'm not sure where that comes from, but I think that, I think that part of it, like having suffered yourself, I think that can foster compassion definitely for other people.
I mean, you don't bring it into the film a great deal, but it's certainly there, of course, at a couple points. But does her faith play into that at all? Or,
you know, Layla is not a religious person, really. If you ask her, you know, she believes in God and she'll talk about God. But it really, I don't think, like, it plays a major role. I think, and interestingly enough, like, the main inspiration for her work in a lot of ways is Mother Teresa.
Really?
So, who's obviously not a Muslim at all, but,
right.
you know... she's not a particularly, she doesn't really practice her faith in the sense of like following the norms or going to the mosque, but in a lot of ways she practices it very well because she's caring for the unwanted people.
Of course, she's actually working her faith out in a day-to-day way, which is probably
right.
something an awful lot of faith-based and religious people around the world couldn't say.
Yes.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Or if we stepped into their lives, we wouldn't see it being teased out
right,
same kind of way.
Right.
I love how much hope she must actually have. You don't get to see it mm-hmm. on her face a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you see it in her sense of humor, I suppose, and how it mm-hmm. comes out throughout. But the amount of hope that she must have, and maybe that, you know, you're right. Her brother, the fact that her brother has been clean, an adopted son. And he's moving this forward with her. She actually sees what can actually happen.
Yes.
She believes in the power of one.
Exactly. She really does. And that's what Layla would always tell people. Like, even if one person gets clean out of 1,000, that is a huge accomplishment for her. That's not nothing. And so she really is very individual based.
There's a moment, and I think it was with... when the first time that you sort of introduce us as viewers to the... her kind of frustration with the ministry and mm-hmm. some government officials. And I think there's kind of a Q&A and there's some presentations and one of the ministers just kind of walks away from her finally because she's kind of really pushing back on him and saying, uh-huh. you're not going to help us. And I know how this is going to play out. And somebody turns to the camera and I'm assuming it was just somebody in the, and I didn't quite see if it was a character,
uh-huh.
but he said, poverty, and unemployment
uh-huh.
are what are causing these problems and these issues. Would you say that? I mean, it sounds kind of like a sweeping generalization to some degree, but how much of it is being driven by that, would you say?
I think there's a lot of truth in that. Poverty, unemployment, a lack of education, but definitely poverty and unemployment are really the factors, a lot of the factors that contribute towards people just going back to using again. Because even if you get clean, I mean, there's a lot of people that said, oh, how can you treat heroin addicts just cold turkey like that? Someone could die of that kind of withdrawal. And she's never had a problem with that. The problem, of course, is when someone does get clean and then there's like no job waiting for them and they have no family here and there's like no opportunities and they're poor and they have no place to live. And then where do you go from there? And it's hard enough to kick heroin in a place where you do have opportunities, like in Canada, for example, and then to be in Afghanistan where there's just nothing really there for you.
Layla talks about the drug addiction being an illness. Would you, and you don't really go into that, I don't think. You certainly represent that visually, and we get to see that. We hear a couple of the other addicts, even the clean addicts, talking about that post coming clean. That, you know, where do you sit with that? You know, the whole, because you kind of end the film interestingly, and I love it, by the way, this existential sort of question about, this is about choice. This is about, you know, and I'm going to kind of save it for the end, but the of our interview, but this idea of perseverance and stepping forward, you know, we got to move forward. Yes, we got to know our past, but you know what, if we spend too much time back there, we're probably just going to revert to it. So yeah, just wondering about that, that whole idea of choice and it makes it sound easy almost, right?
Yeah, it does. It's not.
I mean, it's not.
Well, I agree with Layla's stance that, you know, addiction is an illness. And part of what made me gravitate toward this film, I think on a more subconscious level, is that not that long ago, I learned that my mom had actually worked with men addicted to heroin. And she was the only woman who worked in this, like, quite, it was at the time, it was a really revolutionary clinic for male addicts. And she was the only woman, she was a psychologist, she's the only woman in this ward. And I saw this newspaper clipping of her like surrounded by all these men. I was like, I can't believe that's my mom. Like, that's so crazy. So I think that's what drew me. So I agree with her about that it is a sickness. And I think my mom would have, she's not alive anymore, I think she would have agreed with that as well. And at the same time, I also recognize that there comes a time when you have to make a choice too. And it was really hard filming this documentary because we got so close to our subjects. Aside from Layla, the three men and women who are suffering with addiction that we filmed, and just wanting, you know, they wanted to get clean and they really wanted it. But yet, for example, Saeed Jamil, he just couldn't do it. Or maybe he could have and he just didn't want to. And it was so hard for us to feel powerless, like we couldn't force him to do anything. And, you know, it was really difficult to just let go at that point.
You seem to be following more men than women, but you are careful to let us know that this is not just men who are addicted. Women are addicted as well. Would you say there's it's sort of equal in that kind of distribution? Do they kind of lean on one another in a sense to as a community? Like, if you were to go, I mean, you spent a lot of time under the bridge, no doubt. If I was to go there, would I find mostly men, or would there be a bit of a mix?
You would find mostly men, but there, because the women, a lot of it's more hidden, their addiction. And you know, the women, of course, in addition to being addicted, they're able to support their habit with by prostitution.
Right.
So there's also that kind of hidden side of it as well. And, you know, in terms of like the camaraderie amongst people addicted, you definitely find it. We found many times one addict or one man injecting another man, his friend. And so that's quite common.
Yeah, I think you actually have a couple scenes like that in the film, do you not?
We do, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And is it kind of, in a way, I mean, maybe we wouldn't call it a community of support, but did you sense that like a tenderness, a friendliness within the group, or was it more the scene with the food, of course, sort of suggests that everybody's out for themselves, right?
Yeah, it's a hard question because, I mean, when you think about like a friend, you wouldn't want to inject your friend with heroin, I mean, including their last dose, like that would kill them. So I think there is a camaraderie, but I just, that's authentic, but I don't know if it's coming from the right place, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I think so. No, I think that makes sense. You know, you talked a little bit about, I'd love to, and I know we've got to wrap up in a few minutes and you've got to get to another interview, another meeting. Can you tell me a little bit about that gender disparity? You know, you use the phrase, and it's not one you hear very often, systemic misogyny.
Mm-hmm.
How deep does that stuff go in Afghan culture? I mean, frankly, in cultures everywhere, really.
Mm-hmm.
But did you see, you know, other than that situation, did you see a lot of manifestations of that in particular ways?
Yeah, I mean, of course, I saw a lot of men treat Layla that way, kind of as a second class citizen. And of
right.
course, there's this one incident in particular that's not connected to the stone, but I think it's a tragic incident. It was the story of Farhunda, who was, I'm not sure if you've heard of it, she was a young Islamic scholar. And she was in a mosque and she was there to speak with the mullah because she felt that there were things that were illicit that were going on in that mosque. The mullah was taking advantage of women sexually. And she was there to kind of protest and say, this is not right, this is against Islam. But, you know, seeing her there, they made up this lie about her and said that she was there really to burn the Quran or something like that. And so then this just pack of men from all across the whole area of that the city there descended on her and brutally, brutally murdered her and put her on fire and dragged her body across the street by a car. And so I don't see how that can be anything except for systemic misogyny right there. So that's a particularly tragic example of
it. Wow. It's, you know what? I mean, there aren't even words really to describe it, right? I mean, tragic mm-hmm. doesn't even come close to it. It's just, it's utterly horrifying. And you hear mm-hmm. a story like that and I kind of don't want to believe it. You know,
right. Yeah.
And it's just, and this is to me again, why great documentary films like yours need to be seen and need to be seen often and need to be seen by so many because of the questions mm-hmm. that they raise and mm-hmm. the dialogue and the conversations that hopefully, you know, ensue. Are you, I mean, so we talked briefly, we'll wrap it up in a couple seconds
sure.
here, but
we
talked briefly about hope with Layla, or at least I did. Is she hopeful for her country? Are you hopeful? I know it's maybe a bit of an unfair question because it's such mm-hmm. a massive problem and it's so complicated.
Right.
But you know, you kind of end with this, again, this existential moment of choice and the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't help but, you know, it's just so wonderful, right? Do we live under yeah. it or do we cross over it? You
mm-hmm,
know,
mm-hmm,
where are we going to wind up? And I just so love the quote near the end of the film about perseverance.
Mm-hmm.
About
yeah,
you know what
I mean,
was
the,
stay
the
stay the
yeah.
course. You must persevere.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, and I think that Layla does really believe that. I mean, obviously, if she didn't, she wouldn't keep doing the work if there wasn't
right.
a hope of a better tomorrow. And I have that same hope too for Afghanistan. Although, you know, I think it's also harder, or it's maybe easier to feel hopeless when you're not there in some ways than it is when you are there, because you kind of see good things that are happening on the ground instead of what the media kind of just shows you all the negative things all the time. But I think that also with Layla fighting for a better tomorrow and then believing that change is possible and believing that our lives are worth living and that we can make changes for the better, that gives me hope as well, that if she's not giving up, then none of us should give up on Afghanistan.
Yeah, yeah, or on each other, frankly, right?
Or on each other, yes.
You know, it's wonderful. I've just got to raise a couple of things just as we kind of wrap up here, and then I'd love to mm-hmm. see what's next for you guys. But mm-hmm. I think somebody, one of the guys that was in the back of her car, as she's driving this group of men, which is wonderful, said something about she's as strong as a hundred men. And
yeah.
then there's another moment in the film where she's chasing a bunch of these men who are gawking at these, who are dehumanizing these addicts, I guess, essentially.
Yeah.
And she's
yeah.
got this stick. I mean, it just doesn't get any better than that. And
yeah.
she's chasing them with this stick.
Yes. And she terrified them.
Yeah. And doesn't she actually refer to herself as badass?
Yeah.
I want to know if that's a direct translation.
That's one way to translate that word. Yeah, for sure.
Oh, it's so wonderful. I mean, what a great film about about all the societal issues we've got to work through, the political issues, issues around war and how we treat others. I mean, you've covered so much ground with this film, Elizabeth. It's remarkable. What's next for you guys? You get beyond hot dogs? Are you heading out into a festival tour?
We're going to go to Sheffield, and then we're not sure where we're after that.
Well, you know what, and probably neither is Lila, you know, and neither, frankly, neither am I. So, you know, welcome to the human race, eh? Well, listen, I wish you all the success in the world. It's, I hope everyone gets to see this film. It's an important piece. And again, thanks for your time today. We've been talking with Elizabeth Mirzai about her new film, Lila at the Bridge. Really appreciate your time with me today, Elizabeth.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.